Greetings, this is Tyler McFeeters with your News Gazette, dated Friday, May 15th, 2026. We'll begin today's reading on the front page, 2026 University of Illinois Commencement. Hats off to grads. Four friends have spent part of their senior year on effort to help future student. Story by Luke Taylor, out of Urbana. With more free time than he expected in his senior year at the University of Illinois, Lalit Gurappu decided that he wanted to give back, and he hopes, make a legacy. The Champaign Central High School alumnus can trace the origins of what would become the Senior Class Gift Initiative back to his very first week on campus, when he met Owen Krajecki, Dawini Patel, and Christine Leung. The four friends, all studying in the Geese College of Business, partnered on case competitions, solving hypothetical business problems together. "We just formed a really good team working together," Gurappu said. "Throughout our 4 years, we've been able to all benefit from different experiences. We've gotten a lot out of this, and we wanted to get back." They were aware of how other universities organize some kind of class gift that seniors contribute to, but the UI doesn't have any similar program. "One day after class, we started brainstorming and were thinking, how do we give back?" Gurappu said. As the group brainstormed, they landed on the idea of not just supporting their college, but supporting fellow students and giving them a chance to succeed there. Gurappu personally said he was deeply impacted by scholarships that helped fund his way through all 4 years of school. Back when he was graduating from Central and looking at next steps, he admits his number one priority was to get out of Champaign-Urbana. He certainly did not want to attend the UI. His high school achievements earned him scholarships from Geese, but also from multiple local organizations, some of which also relied on his attendance at UI. Seeing that taking those opportunities would be in his best interest, Gurappu accepted that he'd need to stay in town. "Little did I know, this school is amazing," he said. Gurappu and his friends have all had opportunities and experiences they never would have expected. He personally has visited nearly 20 countries just in his time in college. He's graduating with a job already lined up for the fall, connections within the college, with alumni and with businesses that work with the college. That exact type of experience is what he and his friends want to help provide for at least one student joining the class of 2030. They pitched the idea of a scholarship funded by students for students to Geese leadership, including Dean Brooke Elliott, who got on board with supporting the plan. Since then, Gurappu said the student team has been treating funding this scholarship almost like a job. They weren't afraid to pull on relationships with professors and alumni, earning donations and funding matches from folks like Robert Brown, CEO of Lincoln International, and Steve Miller, founder of Origin Ventures. Even with some of those big names involved, Gurappu said 70% of donors to the Senior Class Gift Initiative were in fact fellow students. The team had to pull on their marketing knowledge to get their peers involved. "How do we meet students where they're at? Students already don't have that much money," Gurappu said, "so you meet them with free food." That meant cold calling businesses around town, several of which ended up being happy to help out, from national chains like Chick-fil-A to more local businesses like Bangkok Thai. "One thing my dad always told me that I take with me every time is, you just have to ask. The worst someone could say is no," Gurappu said. Free food and gift cards drew their peers in, and before they knew it, they had students donating out of their NIL funds or offering cuts from other fundraisers they had organized. The team met their goal and will be providing a $25,000 scholarship to one incoming Geese student this fall. Even with graduation coming up this Saturday, they're already looking to recruit from next year's senior class to make the project happen again. Gurappu said they love for the student body to vote on the goal for each year's gift. This year it was a scholarship, but it could go toward an important cause, to the university itself, or to some other recipient the senior class agrees on. Personally, he's hoping to keep having a positive impact on the world around him as his career continues, maybe by starting a business like Ben & Jerry's that works for a social cause. I really do care about making an impact. That's kind of something my mom has instilled in me. But I also love doing my own thing and running my own thing, Garapu said. I'm starting off in a different industry, private equity consulting, but with that, I'm going to get a lot of skills. With the network of friends I have here and alumni, I'm excited to see what the future has in store. It's not going to be a straight line, but I'm excited just to learn. The next front page story is Savoy Development. Rezoning request rejected. Revision suggested. Category sought by developer not restrictive enough in trustee's opinion. Story by Jana Wiersema. Out of Savoy. A local developer's request to rezone two properties on West Church Street for the construction of rental homes was unsuccessful, but an amended version of the proposal is likely to come before village officials in the future. Flippin' Fabulous LLC, managed by Marissa Sierra and Rhiannon Clifton, sought to rezone 201 and 205 West Church Street from moderate-density single-family residential, R2, to high-density multifamily residential, R5. Trustee Dennis Donaldson made a motion to approve the request during Wednesday's village board meeting, but it failed for lack of a second. Trustee Bill Vavrick later said that while he supports Ciro's proposal, the village's opportunities to exercise authority during the planning and development process are limited, and the rezoning phase could be its only opportunity to have a say in the site's future. I am 100% behind the concept of the cottages, he said. I don't think it breaks what we're trying to do in that neighborhood. I think it could really be a benefit. I have nothing against what the developer is proposing. I don't think there's any ill intent. I think they're going to build cottages. The trouble is that someday they may sell the property to somebody else, and they then have the full ability to do whatever they want within R5. He suggested that Sierra could reapply to have the site rezoned to moderate-density multifamily residential, R4, instead of R5. Cottage courts are a permitted use in both districts, but R5 also allows for dense uses not permitted in R4. Sierra, who is a resident of Savoy, said she plans to seek an R4 rezoning and looks forward to continuing to ensure that this site and others she is developing align with the village's comprehensive plan, while also serving the community in ways that are beneficial to all involved. I understand that we will have different opinions and different perspectives, but I deeply believe we can find common ground and build Savoy together, she told the News Gazette. Her plan is to combine the two lots on Church Street and build a cottage court, which is defined by village ordinance as a group of small-scale, detached dwelling units located on a single lot or individual lots and arranged around a shared court visible from the street. The two properties are located south and west of a site where village officials are working with Downtown Development Group, which is led by Sierra, to create the downtown square. Sierra said in a previous interview that the vision is to have about 8 two-bedroom, two-bathroom homes, which are currently projected to rent at about $2,000 per month. Under the ordinance, the floor area for each home in a cottage court is capped at 1,800 square feet. Several residents and neighbors have opposed the rezoning request. Among other things, individuals have expressed concern that changing the site to R5 creates the potential for more intense development on the property, which is near single-family homes, if plans change. I'm not against progress, as long as it's done in an orderly fashion, and that is your responsibility, Savoy resident Walter Prokish told the board. The people that have been complaining about the impact in the area have a legitimate gripe. However, resident Dana Cohen, who serves as Director of Faculty Recruitment at the University of Illinois, said she's known Ciro for a long time as a friend, neighbor, and colleague, and trusts that what she's trying to do is a good thing for our community. I know that there's housing shortages in the county, Cohen said, and as someone who works to attract talent to our county for what I do, I know we really need quality housing, especially in Savoy, where a lot of people are looking to live when they're coming here to work for various entities in our community. According to Savoy's development ordinance, cottage courts, duplexes, triplexes, quadplexes, townhomes, and multi-unit buildings are allowed in both R4 and R5. However, R5 standards generally allow for denser development, including buildings with more than 12 units and multi-unit building complexes. Additionally, short-term rentals are a permitted use in R5, but require a special use permit in R4. Single-unit dwellings are permitted in R4, but not in R5. The development standards for cottage courts, including lot sizes, setbacks, building heights, and lot coverage, are the same in both districts. My overarching goal is to help Savoy grow in helpful and meaningful ways, Ciro said. Creating conflict, tension, and division in our community has never been my goal. I deeply appreciate the passion our residents have for their community. I hope to continue to work with the community and not against it. Following his failed motion, Donaldson said he does not believe Ciro or the village, which he previously worked for as Director of Planning and Economic Development and later as Village Treasurer, have any ill intentions when it comes to goals for local growth. I love this community, and I would never want to see anything negative happen to the community, he said. So that's why I'm speaking tonight. I think that a lot of folks who are against the rezoning, I don't want to speak for them, I'm only speaking of my own opinion, believe that Savoy will grow too fast. I know a number of people said they don't want to be Champaign-Urbana. I don't think I want to be Champaign-Urbana either. However, he feels that change can be a good thing when it happens the way the majority of folks feel it should. We don't want to chase away developers, he said, because honestly, it has happened in the past, and I think to have someone in the community who wants to build in the community is a good thing. Board member Heather Mangian said she is excited about the cottage court proposal, but echoed Vavrick's sentiments. As Bill has said, this is the time we also need to be carefully planning for the future, she said, and so we look forward to what will and can happen. While the Church Street rezoning failed, a separate request by Grit and Grind Ventures, LLC, managed by Ciro and her husband, Adam, to rezone nearby 206 Wesley Avenue from R2 to Downtown District was approved by the Village Board. Ciro wrote in her application that rezoning the Wesley Avenue site will allow for greater long-term flexibility consistent with the property's proximity to the downtown area and nearby commercial uses, but does not require any immediate change to the current single-family use of the property. She told the News Gazette that she sees Wednesday's Village Board meeting as productive, and she is optimistic that we truly can come together to create positive outcomes for Savoy, the residents, and surrounding communities. All of my projects have the same shared vision of improving Savoy for the community, she said. Having a vision that is community-focused and not strictly profit-driven means that a successful project is one that provides value to the community, not simply maximizing profits. I hope through this process, future meetings, and public discussions, my intentions can be more clearly understood. And then there are some concept arts for the new cottage court development proposed at 201 and 205 West Church Street in Savoy. The Village Board didn't approve a rezoning request for the property, but as the developer is likely to resubmit the request with slight changes. Turning now to national and world news, U.S. Supreme Court. Justices preserve access to abortion pill for now. Washington, out of Washington and the AP. The Supreme Court on Thursday preserved women's access to a drug used in the most common method of abortion, rejecting lower court restrictions while a lawsuit continues. The court's order allows women seeking abortions to continue obtaining the drug, mifepristone, at pharmacies and through the mail without an in-person visit to a doctor. Access is likely to remain uninterrupted at least until into next year as the case plays out, including a potential appeal to the High Court. The justices granted emergency requests from makers of mifepristone, who are appealing a federal appeals court ruling that would require women to see a doctor in person and halt delivery of mifepristone through the mail. The Federal Food and Drug Administration, which first approved mifepristone for use in abortion in 2000, stopped requiring in-person visits 5 years ago. Justices Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito dissented, with Thomas writing that the two companies, Danco Laboratories and GenBio Pro, are not entitled to the court's action to spare them lost profits from their criminal enterprise. Anti-abortion groups, frustrated with President Donald Trump's administration, are pushing the FDA to move faster with a review that they hope will result in restrictions on mifepristone, including blocking its prescribing via telehealth platforms. The Republican administration says the work takes time. Earlier this week, FDA Commissioner Marty Makary resigned after months of criticism from Trump's political allies, including abortion opponents. Susan B. Anthony, Pro-Life America, and similarly aligned groups had called on Trump to fire Makary over the slow pace of the mifepristone review. The court is dealing with its latest abortion controversy 4 years after its conservative majority overturned Roe v. Wade and allowed more than a dozen states to effectively ban abortion outright. The case before the court stems from a lawsuit Louisiana filed to roll back the Food and Drug Administration rules on how mifepristone can be prescribed. The state claims that the policy undermines the ban there, and it questions the safety of the drug, which has repeatedly been deemed safe and effective by FDA scientists. Next in the national and world news, Mideast conflict. Tensions flare as a ship is seized and another sunk. Responsible parties unclear. Story out of Dubai and the United Arab Emirates and the AP. A ship anchored off the United Arab Emirates was seized and taken toward Iran, and another, a cargo ship near Oman, sank after being attacked, authorities said Thursday, as tensions escalated near the Strait of Hormuz. It wasn't immediately clear who was behind these incidents, but they happened as a senior Iranian official reiterated his country's claim of control over the waterway, and another said it had a right to seize oil tankers connected to the U.S. The turmoil in the strait, which a fifth of the world's oil passed through before the war, has been a sticking point for weeks in talks between the U.S. and Iran to end the conflict. Iran's grip on the vital waterway has jolted the world economy and spiked fuel prices far beyond the Middle East. The ongoing instability in the region comes as U.S. President Donald Trump met with Chinese leader Xi Jinping in Beijing. The White House said both sides had agreed with the Strait of Hormuz must remain open. Just last week, tensions flared in the strait when U.S. forces fired on and disabled Iranian oil tankers that it said were trying to breach its blockade of Iran's ports. The United Kingdom Maritime Trade Operations Center said it received reports that the ship seized Thursday was taken by unauthorized personnel while anchored 38 nautical miles northeast of the UAE port of Fujairah, an important oil export terminal that has been repeatedly attacked during the war with Iran. The UK Maritime Center did not name the ship seized Thursday and said it is investigating. The British military said the vessel is heading toward Iranian waters. Indian authorities said Thursday that an Indian-flagged cargo ship sank off the coast of Oman after an attack sparked a fire aboard the vessel while it was en route from Somalia to Sharjah, another UAE port. They did not say who attacked the ship. The attack on the Indian-flagged cargo ship Haji Ali occurred Wednesday, according to Mukesh Mangal, a senior official in India's shipping ministry. The next story on National and World News is diplomatic visit. Taiwan question hangs over Trump-Xi discussions. Out of Beijing in the AP. China's Xi Jinping warned President Donald Trump on Thursday that their two countries could clash over Taiwan if the issue is not handled appropriately. And not handled properly, an unusually harsh admonition that stood in contrast to the American leader's praise for his counterpart. The exchange at a highly anticipated summit in Beijing underscored just how far apart Trump and Xi still are on thorny issues, including the war in Iran, trade disputes, and Washington's relations with Taiwan, which is self-ruled but which China claims as part of its territory. It also suggested that Trump's three-day visit to China is likely to be longer on pageantry and symbolism than substantive political or economic breakthroughs. The pair met for about 2 hours behind closed doors at the Great Hall of the People after an elaborate welcome ceremony featuring booming cannons, a band playing the Star Spangled Banner and China's national anthem, and hundreds of school children jumping and waving flowers and American and Chinese flags. According to a post on X by Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Mao Ning, Xi told Trump that the Taiwan question is the most important issue in China-U.S. relations. If it is handled properly, the bilateral relationship will enjoy overall stability. Otherwise, the two countries will have clashes and even conflicts, putting the entire relationship in great jeopardy, she wrote. That comment followed a brief public exchange before the meeting began, in which Trump told Xi, "You're a great leader. Sometimes people don't like me saying it, but I say it anyway, because it's true. It's an honor to be your friend," Trump said before promising that the U.S.-China relationship is going to be better than ever before. Trump later told Fox News' Sean Hannity in an interview that Xi said during their conversations that he would like to be of help in negotiating an end to the Iran war and reopening the Strait of Hormuz to oil shipments. Xi was far more stark in his opening public remarks, expressing hope that the U.S. and China could avoid conflict and asking whether the two countries can transcend the Thucydides trap and forge a new model for relations between major powers. That's a term popular in foreign policy studies, referring to the idea that when a rising power threatens to displace an established one, the result is often war. Xi has used the term for years, but using it as Trump offered optimism was noteworthy and foreshadowed his closed-door comments on Taiwan. And I suppose that's it for national and world news. We have our communities now. There is On the Town, an occasional photo spotlight from an area event. Today, experience Champaign-Urbana Foundation's Toast to Tourism, celebrating community brilliance event on May 6th at Carmen's in Champaign. The Experience Champaign-Urbana Foundation hosted Toast to Tourism. This is just duplicated. Okay. The Brilliant Spirit Award winners, Stephen Bentz of the Virginia Theater in Champaign, Lauren and Jeffrey Brokish of Salt Fork Food Works in Champaign-Urbana, Wayne Lam of 83 Vietnamese Cuisine in Champaign, Julie and Mark Hardy of Hardy's Reindeer Ranch in Rantoul, and Chris and Ann Lukeman of CU Adventures in Parkadia in Urbana. There were nearly 300 people in attendance. Food was provided by CRS Catering and Nothing Bundt Cakes. Music was provided by the Broadmoor Quartet. Speakers were Jenk Pinholster, Dean of the University of Illinois College of Fine and Applied Arts, Chandra Somerville of the Champaign County African American Heritage Trail, and Armando Sandoval of May's Mexican Grill. This event supports the work of the ECU Foundation, which fuels destination growth through film, talent, and events, plus invests in projects like the African American Heritage Trail to amplify culture, spark economic growth, and build a vibrant, inclusive region. And then there's about 9 pictures or so of Looks like an overhead view of the nearly 300 attendees at the event at Carmen's in Champaign. A bunch of people standing behind the CU logo. And yeah. On the next page in our communities, class dismissed. And then there's some pictures. Channing Prophet has an emotional moment right before crossing the stage to receive her nursing degree Thursday at Parkland College's graduation ceremony at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts in Champaign. Above, before receiving her nursing pin, Jasmine Wilson hugs a Parkland College professor tightly during the commencement ceremony. Below, graduate Ashley Brown waves to her friends and family after being handed her degree in medical assisting. And then further down left, graduates filled in from the sides before being seated in the middle of the room. Right, Melissa Moore excitedly walks the stage to receive her degree in nursing. And finally in our communities, Capital News, Illinois. Senate Dems introduce bills to regulate AI. Story by Jenna Schweikert and UIS Public Affairs Reporting. With just 2 weeks left in the spring legislative session, Illinois Senate Democrats introduced an 8-page bill aimed at regulating some uses of artificial intelligence after a lack of federal action on the issue. Illinois lawmakers modeled their bills that address consumer protection, developer transparency, and educational usage after legislation in California and New York to create a de facto national standard, State Senator Bill Cunningham, Democrat of Chicago, told Capital News, Illinois. In committee hearings, industry advocates voiced concerns about state regulations, creating a patchwork environment that is difficult to do business in, and encouraged lawmakers to wait for federal action. But no such movement has been made in Congress, and President Donald Trump signed an executive order in December discouraging states from excessive regulation. From our observation, not much is happening at all in Washington, so we felt it was necessary for us to act, Cunningham said. We also were motivated by the idea that two other big states have passed pretty meaningful AI regulation, California and New York, and together we believe that our three states will cover about 40% of the AI market in the United States. Led by Cunningham, the senators said in a Wednesday news conference that they're aiming to pass their bills before the chambers adjourn on May 31st, and they're undaunted by threats from the federal government. Some of the bills include specific provisions about deferring to federal actions, if any come to fruition, and states are subject to federal law. But despite Trump's threats, which include potentially withholding broadband funding, Cunningham said lawmakers are dedicated to regulating AI. There are all sorts of threats happening right now about the federal government cracking down on states doing things that the Trump administration doesn't like, Cunningham said. We're going to do the right thing regardless of those threats, and that's what we're trying to do with this package. The bills are each aimed at specific, ongoing issues relevant to AI, and senators are looking to protect their constituents in those areas, said State Senator Lauren Elman, Democrat of Naperville. Senate Bill 315 from State Senator Mary Edley Allen, Democrat of Libertyville, aims to require more transparency from large developers like OpenAI, the company that developed ChatGPT. Illinois needs to create a roadmap for responsible innovation to prevent catastrophic risks, Edley Allen said, comparing the technology to the Wild Wild West. This is not about stopping innovation, but rather about balancing the great promise of AI with its potential harms, she said. The bill would require large developers, those with annual gross revenues greater than $500 million, to create, follow, and publish a framework detailing how they approach incorporating industry standards, assess the model's capabilities and potential for catastrophic risk, and identify and respond to safety incidents. It would also require developers to review this framework annually and advertise any significant modifications. And we will take a short break now and return with the second half hour of your News Gazette, dated Friday, May 15th, 2026. Please stay tuned.